lot of basketball flavor today. It is that time of year. We had Dana Ford on, Tennessee State's men's basketball coach, earlier in the show. Tigers are on fire right now. They've won six in a row with four to go. Let's bring in Jerry Palm, CBS Sports. He's certainly right in the center of the brackets and everything that was released yesterday. I was watching his work. Jerry, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing wonderful. You know, us media, we're so smart, right? Let's see, Ohio State picked 11th in the Big Ten this year in preseason, and Tennessee picked...
Something like that.
Yeah, Tennessee picked 13 out of 14 preseason in the SEC.
Yep.
What great stories how...
I don't think was expected from Auburn either,
right.
Clemson. You know, you've got a lot of teams hanging around that in that top 16 that, you know, weren't really thought to be top 16-level teams.
Well, let's start there. I mean, how did... obviously, we follow Tennessee very closely here. Tennessee and Ohio State, on no one's radar, nobody picking them, how have they turned in these type of seasons?
Well, they've gotten probably, you know, especially good play from, you know, players that maybe wasn't expected of them or, you know, a higher level than was expected. And for Ohio State, for example, which is a team that I'm more familiar with here in Big Ten country, you know, Caleb Bates-Diop was out last year hurt. Thought he was a pretty good player, but didn't expect he would have a Big Ten Player of the Year kind of season, and that's what he's done. He's put this team on his back, and I don't want to say he's carried him because it would make it sound like a one-man gang, which it's really not. They have a lot of good players around him. Jay Sean Tate's really good. Even Andrew Dockage coming off the bench has been a big lift for this team, and Chris Holtman's a great coach. It's as simple as that, and so they're in first place in the Big Ten right now, having that kind of a year. And I think Rick Barnes has done a great job, you know, with Tennessee, just getting more out of his guys than, you know, people thought was possible. And sometimes it's the collection, you know. Sometimes you've got really good chemistry and guys who buy in and step their games up a little bit and just playing well together, better than they might play well with someone else.
Kentucky got roughed up last week. They got beat at home by Tennessee, and then they went to College Station, and all you know what broke loose, and they really didn't have a chance against the Aggies. And, of course, with the first and second rounds here in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena, everybody's trying to figure out who's coming here. Well, how do you think this is going to play out with Kentucky? What kind of seed are they looking at? This is obviously not the Kentucky teams we've been accustomed to over the years.
Yeah, they really look a lot more like a borderline top 25 team. The talent is better than that, but it's really young talent. In fact, I think I heard they're the youngest team in Division I, and that's not insignificant. Even when you're very talented, which Kentucky is, that kind of youth where you just don't have a veteran to sort of, you know, guide the young kids through the battles and have them know what to expect and set examples even.
Yeah, that's not a stat coaches want. Youngest team in the country.
Well, not usually, no. When you have that kind of talent, you'll try and fight through it. But, you know, it's just one of those things where they are not really able to play with at the consistent level that we're used to seeing from Kentucky. They're still a very good team, and they'll probably be dangerous in the tournament, but they're looking more like a 6 or a 7 seed. And I'm not sure it's a 6 or 7 seed team that I would want in my region necessarily.
So there are some teams that would make sense. Cincinnati's having a big year. Tennessee, Kentucky. How do you kind of see
you
in this?
For Nashville?
Yeah, for Nashville, this pod playing out here.
Yeah, so certainly Auburn and Tennessee among the top 16 seeds and Clemson, I think, are all closer to Nashville. Let's see. Cincinnati and Xavier are actually closer to Detroit by about 15 miles. So the committee could kind of go either way with them. Any SEC team, it's going to be, well, maybe A&M is closer to Omaha, but everybody else is, you know, going to be closest to Nashville. I mean, that's pretty obvious SEC country. But even a team like, you know, Purdue, if for some reason, you know, two teams, Purdue's actually closer to Detroit, but not that far from Nashville either, could end up there. You could get, there's a lot of teams, you know, kind of in line for Nashville. And obviously, you know, Tennessee fans, I'm sure, would love to play in Nashville in particular. But they're going to have to get a high seed to do it, you know, a 2 or a 3 to have a shot, because there's a lot of competition for that. That's the most competitive regional site or sub-regional site in terms of, you know, the number of teams that are close to it.
Jerry Palm on the line with us. We recently had on Kermit Davis on our show from MTSU, Rick Stansberry from Western Kentucky. What we're trying to figure out, Jerry, is usually you have to, we know, those coaches know what you have to do. You have to win the tournament to get in. But is this the year where maybe two tickets could get punched? Or no? Do you think Western and MTSU can get in?
I think Western Kentucky is really the better at-large candidate. At least they were for a while. Now it might be middle. You know, Western Kentucky's got that win over Purdue in the Bahamas, which is just huge for them. But they've got, you know, five bad losses now. And, boy, that number is pretty big. But I wouldn't rule them out. You know, middle has got some nice wins, but didn't get, you know, a win like that. You know, that's the kind of win that's really going to grab the committee's attention. And Middle Tennessee doesn't have a win of that caliber. But, you know, those are pretty good teams. I certainly wouldn't rule them out. You know, the bottom of the at-large pool is not very strong. It never is. I don't mean it's any worse this year than other years. But, you know, teams like Middle Tennessee that have really strong seasons, there just isn't a lot of margin for error. Basically, the only team that they can lose to is Western Kentucky.
Tom is with us, and we always love talking about brackets and teams and locations during this time of the year with him. Jerry, as you talked about geography here recently, do you think the committee will look at it any differently this year, especially based on South Carolina's run last year and being able to play a high-profile team like Duke in South Carolina?
No, I don't. No, not at all. No, that's what they want. That's what the schools have said they want. They want to be able to be close to home. So you could see a 7-seeded TCU, for example, in Dallas. Not a problem. They'll do that in a heartbeat.
Interesting. Well, I don't know if everybody would agree with you, but
I'm just saying that maybe, you know, the teams that have to play them don't like it, but the feedback has been universal. The coaches all want to play close to home, as close to home as they can, for various reasons. But one is for their fans to be able to get there. But another is, you know, the expenses. It's easier to cost less to have people. Now, what I don't think they'll do is put Belmont in Nashville. I don't think they'll do that. I mean, not as a 13-seater below, anyway.
You know, you've done this long enough to see at times they will emphasize certain things when they're looking at criteria. And they just came out, of course, with their brackets here recently. Anything you read from them, anything that's jumping out at you that you're hearing that they might be emphasizing this year more so than in the past?
No, it's all the same. You know, the thing that varies is the comparison from team to team and what sort of criteria stands out. A lot of people were surprised to see Michigan State so low, but they just haven't played that many games against better teams, in part because the Big Ten is down this year. They just haven't had a chance to get the level of competition they normally get in their league, and they didn't play a very good non-conference schedule, even though they played North Carolina and Duke. They didn't really play anybody else. And that is that's hurt them this year in terms of their ability to get a good seed and the respect that the poll voters have for Michigan State from the committee.
Last thing for me, I know you follow Purdue closely, and they had the big weekend, the showcase game against Michigan State. We talked to Dana Ford, Tennessee State's coach, earlier today, and he said Purdue's the best team they face, and they've faced four or five really good teams so far this year. So how do you think their team is compared to maybe past teams in terms of not just maybe getting a one seed, but maybe having a real chance to win the whole thing?
Well, this is the best Purdue team since Robbie Hummel had two good knees back in 2010. That team was lined up for a number one seed and a lot of people's favorites to go to the Final Four and maybe even win the whole thing with Etwan Moore and Juwan Johnson and Chris Kramer. Then Robbie Hummel blows his ACL and that season gets derailed. This team doesn't have an individual player as good as Robbie Hummel or Etwan Moore, but collectively they play with better cohesion than just about any team in the country. And I think part of it is you've got four senior starters who've been doing it together for that long. And a sophomore stud in Carson Edwards who can just turn a game over on his own. I mean, he can take control of a game and dominate a game, and probably the one guy on Purdue that can do that better than anybody. So it's a very good team on both ends of the floor. They're really hard to defend because you kind of have to pick your poison. Are you going to try and double team Isaac Haas, the mountain in the lane, or and leave a three-point shooter open who shoots 40%, or are you going to let him get his 40 and take your chances?
Right before we brought you on, CBS Sports put out there that Andy Kennedy was going to step down.
Saw that.
After the season's conclusion. This is his 12th year at Ole Miss. Were you surprised by that, Jerry?
A little, I think, although they're struggling this year. He's their all-time winningest coach, I believe. Is he not?
I think so.
He is.
Yeah, you know, the problem at Ole Miss right now is that everybody's getting better and they're not.
Yeah.
And so they've got, it's kind of a shame because I think he's done a great job there, and it's not an easy job. I saw that news too. I don't know what they're expecting to get, but they're obviously going to get a leg up on the search because they've already made the decision here in February.
As we wrap this up, do you think there's a great team out there this year or just some really, really good teams?
I think there's a lot of great teams. I just don't think there's a dominant team. There isn't anybody that you wonder how you're going to beat. And so I think that, Duke has got terrific talent. I mean, the thing that stood out to me about that top 16 is that the three most talented teams, I think you could argue, are Duke, Michigan State, and Arizona, and none of them are one seed. So I think that gives you kind of an idea of what's going on in college basketball this year.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of talent out there, but they don't necessarily do things well together because it's young talent. And then you've got veteran teams that are doing really well because they know how to do it. So it's a nice mix in college basketball this year.
Yeah, I turned on the Arizona game the other night, and I'm like, they're at home. What happened? I mean, what's going on with this
UCLA
team? Yeah, lose bad. Jerry, really appreciate it. Always good to catch up with you. Thanks for doing this.
All right, thanks.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports. Always good to talk to him. And it is interesting. I agree with him, Willie. I thought that was – I don't know if you caught what he said there, but when I asked about Andy Kennedy, and he may be falling victim to the circumstances, and I think that's what's happened in the SEC in football for so many years, right? We've talked about it a lot. It's the Nick Saban effect. And this isn't about one coach in the SEC when it comes to basketball. It's about all these – young or all these new coaches that they've been bringing to the league. I mean, you've got Bruce Pearl at Auburn. You got Howlin at Mississippi State. You've got Barnes at Tennessee. We've talked about Will Wade now at LSU. All these new coach, Konzo Martin at Missouri. By the way, the Missouri-Mississippi State game was fantastic on Saturday. What a finish. It was crazy. But you've got all these coaches, and we all agree that the SEC has gotten way better, and I think you have to start because they've been hiring these coaches. I think it's what's going to cost Mark Fox his job at Georgia. I mean, they're just kind of, you know, they just hang around every year, but there's really nothing sexy about Mark Fox at Georgia.
Yeah, I think Mark Fox is in the same boat as Andy Kennedy. I would not be surprised
at all. I think he's toast.
The change there.
Yeah.
I think it looks like the writing's on the wall. And Mark Fox has survived a couple of times before, just like Andy Kennedy. But I do think a fresh start at both of those places is probably there. I mean, you just can't say that they haven't had a chance, those guys.
And I was told when I was at the game on Wednesday when they were in town, Georgia was before they lost by 15 to Vanderbilt, that if he lost that game, he might be in some trouble. So, of course, he loses that game.
Oh, he's in more than just trouble.
Yeah, so even before going into that game, he was in some trouble. After losing that, I don't know if he survives now.
Do you realize this is his 12th season at Ole Miss? Andy Kennedy has only had two seasons where he didn't win 20 games, and one of them was 19 wins. And this year, they're not going to get to 20 this year.
Yeah, but it shows you what it's all about, and that is strength of schedule. You can get yourself 20 wins if your non-conference strength of schedule isn't great, and you win a game or two in the SEC tournament. Maybe you get to the NIT and win a game or two. That I don't know how many times he's made the NIT. It's more than once if he's only made the NCAA tournament twice. They've rarely been bad.
Six times he's been in the NIT.
Six times.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they just have not been good enough. And part of it, I think, is that they have not scheduled very smart. I think that is part of it. I don't know if that's budget or what, but sometimes you have to look past the win and loss. When you say, well, so-and-so has won 20 games. Well, you got to tell me what league that's in. You got to tell me the strength of schedule. You got to tell me you know, where does that fall in line with the overall criteria?
Right, because what does that say? So this is year 12, so let's leave this year out of it, because we know it's not going to be 20 wins, and it's going to be they're not going anywhere. So 9 of 11 years going into this season, they won 20 or more games, and yet they have two NCAA appearances to show for it. Look, whatever you want to say about Andy Kennedy, nice guy, he was always great to deal with, seems like a good coach, a good basketball coach, but this is a results business. And when you look at his body of work in 12 seasons at Ole Miss, it's going to be two NCAA tournament appearances, and I believe he won one game. So he's won one tournament.
Yeah, he won one game back with Marshall Henderson.
Right, one game in the tournament in 12 years. He spent 1 year at Cincinnati, and they went to the NIT. It is a results business, and he's a nice guy, and everybody thinks he's a good coach. But when you look at the last 13 years, Andy Kennedy as a coach in the NCAA, he's been to two NCAA tournaments, and he's won one tournament game. That's it. That's not good enough.
Particularly at Ole Miss, too, it seems like. And like I said last segment, I really think that looking around at the SEC coaches that are around now, Andy Kennedy is just not up to snuff with the John Calipari's, the Bruce Pearls, and even Avery Johnson's of the world. And Ole Miss has a brand-new facility down there in Pavilion. I think
Avery Johnson's another one I left off that list.
So he brand-new facility. And Mark Fox at Georgia, there's a lot of talent in basketball. We talk about football talent in Georgia. There's plenty of basketball talent. Like Wendell Carter was a five-star. He's playing at Duke, and he's from Pace Academy up there in Atlanta. There's no reason why Georgia or Georgia Tech should ever be bad at basketball. So especially with, look, Athens is a great place. You should have zero, like, especially with how the SEC is now, there should be no reason why any coach at Georgia and at Georgia Tech cannot win and can convince kids to go to their campuses. I've been to both, and both fantastic. No reason why they shouldn't be good.
Bottom line is there's pressure. There's real pressure now in this league for the first time in basketball because of what we just said. And I think Ole Miss, Andy Kennedy is – he has fallen victim to that. Mark Fox is going to fall victim to that. And I'm trying to figure out if we're leaving anybody else off. But I think those two, absolutely, for sure. And Bryce Drew. Let's add Bryce Drew to the list. He's another one that he looks like an up-and-comer. Last year, they get to the tournament. We know about the recruiting class. Vanderbilt will be on everybody's radar next year. It didn't happen this year. But these hires in this conference, it's forcing everybody, you better be good, or the leash is going to be much shorter than it's been in the past.
What do you guys think of this? Jerry Palm just sort of floated this out there. You guys were asking about who could be coming to Nashville. Auburn to Nashville, to me, seems like that would be an ideal kind of – if I'm on the committee and I want to reward a team regionally but not put them in their own backyard, to me, Auburn to Nashville is perfectly. If they're the SEC regular champion – a regular season champ, and they do reasonably well in the SEC tournament, whether they win it or not. If they're a 2 or 3 seed, maybe even a three, they would deserve a reward of playing close to home. Nashville would be perfect. How many people would Auburn bring, though? That's the thing. That'll be an interesting thing to watch. Is they've sort of caught fire. Does their fan base get interested? I mean, it's been a long time since they've been relevant in college basketball.
Well, their attendance has been pretty good this year, right?
It is there. Yeah. But I'm talking about traveling, though. It would be different because they never bring anybody to the SEC tournament.
No. Yeah, Matt Jones, though, from Kentucky Sports Radio, was on with us last week, and he talked about he thought Auburn would travel well. Because you're saying Tennessee, Auburn, when they're good, they kind of have the sneaky, like, good traveling fan bases. So if Auburn's playing in the NCAA tournament for the first time in, what, like, 15 years or so, and they're playing in Nashville, I don't think they're going to have a hard time convincing their team, their fans, to, A, come, one, come visit and play and visit Nashville, and two, support this team.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd love to see it.
That's another reason I can't stand this whole St. Louis hosting the SEC tournament. I mean, this would have been the perfect year. And I think I brought this up last week. I mean, this would be the perfect year where it's always reliant on Kentucky and what they're bringing because we know what they're going to bring. But this year, you've actually got a really good Tennessee basketball team. And their fans will travel. Their fans will be there. And they'll probably go to St. Louis. But they would have definitely been here. I mean, the attendance.
The attendance would have been huge
in Nashville if the SEC men's basketball tournament was here this year.
Bama would have traveled, I'm sure.
I don't know about Bama basketball.
Auburn and Bama, I believe it when I see it. I've never seen it before.
Right.
I really haven't.
I agree.
They can get it going in their own buildings there, but traveling has been a different thing. for both of those schools.
I mean, if Charles Barkley rented a bus, then they probably get on the bus and
well, Barkley would
come
have been
up
here.
To Nashville. Yeah, Barkley would come. He loves Nashville.
Oh, of course.
But I don't know. But Tennessee would have been huge.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
They would have brought a ton. And it would have been for their games.
Well,
it would have been.
Are they
sellouts.
Out of the realm? Are they out of the realm of getting sent to Nashville?
No.
If they have a strong finish to the season, they could get put
they
in Nashville.
They have to win
Look,
out.
Vince laid out. I don't know if they have to win out. If they have one stumble,
I think it's
one stumble.
Well, looking at where they're at right now as a 4 seed, and you're looking at Xavier's a 1 seed, and there's a Detroit factor in there. But I see Purdue and Michigan State going to Detroit before Xavier does. And also with Cincinnati, you look at Ohio State. There's just so many – and Auburn is ahead of them. There's just too many teams ahead of it. Tennessee right now where they cannot lose a game at this point.
What do they have, 18 wins?
They're 18-6.
Okay, so they have 18 wins. They have got, I mean, 2 games against Georgia, South Carolina home tomorrow. That is a win. Home against Florida, they can win that game easily. At Ole Miss, at Mississippi State. Let's say there's
I'm
one stumble.
I'm calling for 5-1.
That's what I say. I agree. 5-1. That's where I'm going,
Willie.
They should
at least be 5-1 looking at
that
schedule.
Okay, that puts them 23-7. And then you win a couple of games in the SEC tournament. 25 wins? Sure, they've got a real shot of coming
well,
here, right?
I think it's a shot, but I also think it's worth debating because I think it's a huge factor when somebody gets to play really close to home. And I can see a committee rewarding teams that are a 1 seed, a 2 seed, maybe even a 3 with that. But where it really gets hairy is when the example Jerry Palm put out there, a TCU playing in Dallas or something like that. South Carolina last year was the prime example to get everybody talking. But should a team that's like a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 seed, I think that makes a big, big difference in what a tournament atmosphere is going to look like if you get a team that gets to play in their backyard like that.
Yeah, Duke got screwed last year because they weren't. It wasn't just that they played South Carolina; is North Carolina was also there and they played before them and beat Arkansas. So it's all the North Carolina fans and then the South Carolina fans. The entire building is going against Duke.
It's huge, huge factor in the game, no doubt about it.
So that's why you don't think Kentucky should be sent here. You are rooting against
not
a great atmosphere in Nashville?
Oh, not if they're a 7, 8, 9 seed. Of course, with Kentucky, it almost doesn't matter where you send them.
No.
You could send them to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and I still think they
you
would
could
have
send them
half
to the Olympics.
Building.
They'd
yeah.
still be there. Yeah.
That's true. But at least if you send them somewhere else, then you can't say, well, we gave them special treatment. If you send them to Nashville, then I think everybody says, well, look at that. Kentucky's going to take over that building.
Jimmy.
If you're a 1 seed or a 2 seed, that's fine.
Yeah. Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, you guys are talking about SEC basketball coaches. Based on, I'm not saying I'm an insider or anything, but based on what I'm hearing from my connections in Athens, just the writing's on the wall and this will be it for Mark Fox, barring a Dennis Felton run in the SEC tournament.
I'm not even sure it saves him, Jimmy. And you're right. That's a great example because it has saved him in the past. I don't think it's – I just think it's time. Honestly, Mark Fox, I'm surprised we're still talking about him at Georgia in 2018.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of – you know, there's been a lot of frustrated – you know, Georgia doesn't have a huge fan base in basketball, but, I mean, like when – you know, when Herrick was there, they were selling out the place. When Chubby was there, they were selling out the place. And the name – the name that keeps popping up is Forbes at ETSU. He's extremely well-connected on the AAU circuit, and the guy can just flat-out coach if you look at what he's done there. So look for a race between Ole Miss and Georgia, I think, to go after Forbes. But I'll hang up with you guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jimmy. I don't think that's a bad name to be throwing out there.
I think he'll be on the radar.
No question. All right, we'll come back. I'm going to ask you a question. NHL Network just put out this tweet. Okay, Sidney Crosby got his 400th goal yesterday, okay? And they've got which of these stars is most likely to reach 400 goals first. And I'm going to give you their list, and you tell me, okay? So we'll do that on the other side. Also, if you didn't hear, Mike Fisher practicing for the first time with the Predators today in their Monday skate. So we'll get into that and more next on 102.5 The Game. Willie, I've got to let you and the listeners in on a conversation before the break, or during the break.
Okay, I'm ready. First of all, let me also commend Julian He's shaking up the music.
I know.
Here.
We do have some new
and
tunes.
I like it. I like these tunes. He and I are going to work well together.
Is this Cutting Edge?
Saint Motel, my type.
Yeah, good solid stuff.
All right. I agree.
All right, let him in.
All right. So Julian comes in here, and he's like, Forbes, Georgia. Georgia could do better than Forbes. Okay, it's not a great Julian impression, but I'm trying. And I'm like, what do you mean? Forbes is there's nothing. He's done a really good job at ETSU. Who they got bounced by Florida last year in the tournament, I believe.
Blown out.
He's done it. Yeah, but Florida's really good, except for when they played Vanderbilt.
Right, Willie?
That's right.
So for Forbes.
3-0.
I said Forbes, but he's like, they could do better. And I'm like, based on what? I was like, Julian, the last basketball coaches at Georgia, you got Tubby Smith, you got Dennis Felton, you've got Mark Fox, and you've got Jim Herrick. Like, people are not crawling to go to Athens, Georgia to be their basketball coach. One, it's a huge football school, and nobody cares about basketball. I think the last time they cared, Dominique Wilkins was there. I mean, it's not like people, there's a long line of people, and he's like, yeah. I was like, there's nothing wrong with Forbes. That's exactly. Get a fresh look, a guy, an up-and-comer, a guy with a lot of energy. That's perfect. That's how you kind of change the culture. And I said, well, then, okay, so give me a name. Give me who? And so he's thinking long and hard. He's I mean, Tom Crean would be better than Forbes. Tom Crean? I was like, the last time Tom Crean was relevant, Dwayne Wade was playing for him at Marquette. That was a long time ago.
Not true.
And then he went on to tell me about all the successes that he had at Indiana where they made their big run to the Sweet 16.
Look, all I said was I thought Tom Crean – I'm firmly a part of the group that believes Tom Crean can coach. Okay? So I understand Tom Crean, Indiana, didn't work out. He won at Marquette back in the old Conference USA. He won multiple Big Ten titles at Indiana with Sweet 16s. I know they want Final Fours and National Championship, but Indiana fans need to realize that the Indiana basketball, Bob Knight, it's over. It's not coming back. I don't care if Romeo Langford anyone goes there. It's not happening. Indiana is a program of the past, just like UCLA. Not happening for you anymore, Indiana.
Okay, so,
move on.
Let me ask you something. Is Indiana, when we say the Blue Bloods, is Indiana a Blue Blood?
Right now? No.
No, I'm asking you.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, if you were saying Blue Bloods in college basketball, we would all say Kentucky and Duke and Kansas, right? We would all – North Carolina. We know the usual stuff. Is Indiana in that group?
Yes. They are historically, yes.
Yes.
Not anymore.
Indiana's – yes, they are a Blue Blood program.
Not
now, they haven't played like it. I get it. But, you know, Willie and I do remember when Indiana had huge standards, you know, when they were competing for national championships and they were great year in and year out. And they were a huge program to the landscape of college basketball. It hasn't been that way in a long time. I get it. But they are a blue blood program.
True. Also, I'll say about Georgia coaches, Jim Herrick did win a national championship in 95 at UCLA, and Tubby Smith ended up winning a national championship at Kentucky.
Right, but
so,
none
hey,
of them
hey,
done at Georgia.
Go.
None
national of them. National championship coaches.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think, Julian, where I'm going to meet you guys in the middle is say that I think we're underselling Steve Forbes, number one, as an up-and-comer. I think he's a guy that in the SEC area, I think he's ready, I think, for a jump. Like that. It would depend on what does Georgia want, what's their budget, how much money are they going to throw at somebody. Tom Crean certainly would be an interesting name to float because he's probably looking for that next gig, and Georgia might fit what he's looking for. I do think there's a big, big upside at Georgia. They've got a huge talent well that is untapped, I think, and Georgia Tech hasn't really been able to figure it out either the last several years. So I think you could attract some top name guys, but sometimes the best move is to get a Steve Forbes rather than a guy that is cycled back because it's more inexpensive to start with, and then you sort of build and you catch the guy on the rise.
He made I take that back. He made three runs to the Sweet 16.
There you go.
My apologies.
There you go.
I said
Tom
two.
Crean.
Tom Crean.
I said two, but that was off the top of my head. I looked it up.
Listen, all you've got to do is go to Bloomington one time. And you'll know that that's still a blue blood program. They when you can
Willie
put a
had a memorable
together,
game there in Bloomington, very memorable.
What happened?
I scored five.
He
I scored
five
in Assembly Hall.
That's five more than
Assembly
us.
Hall.
All right.
Yep. Got beat by 40. But that's all right.
I was waiting for that part.
That's cool.
In fact, we were an NIT team that year. We were not as good. The year before, it was the group with Calvert Cheney and Damon Bailey and Greg Anderson. Solid team. They went to the Final Four in 1992. That year, they beat us. They beat us the year they went to the Final Four, 1992, and that was at Assembly Hall. Game on ESPN. This is before there was ESPN2 and ESPN3 and all these other things. So to get on ESPN against Indiana was big, and they smoked us. But the year before, they were really good, too, and they beat us by – they were, I think, one of only two teams that beat us at Memorial Gym the whole year. But, that place is such a – it just reeks basketball. It was derailed by Kelvin Sampson. It still really hasn't recovered from the way Bobby Knight left. And I think that's an upcoming 30 for 30, right? The last days of Bobby Knight.
Yeah.
And that's a long time ago. It just hasn't come back. But I still think the right guy. I thought Crean would do it.
I did too.
He wasn't awful.
No.
But I still think that upside is there. It still can get back to blue blood.
I will grant you, he was not awful. And in fact, if we're doing a results business, his results are way better than Andy Kennedy. Marquette, Indiana, his resume looks incredibly better than Andy Kennedy. So, yes, I'm just saying, at this point, how old is Tom Crean? What is he? He's in his early 50s. Okay, so he's not that old. So,
no, not at all.
Forbes is 52.
Okay.
And Tom Crean has proven that he can win. So that's all I'm saying.
I guess where I'm at is I probably gave him unfair, kind of what Willie said. I thought he was really going to get it turned around. I thought that was the hire that was going to turn around Indiana basketball. I thought it was going to get back to that feel of the glory days. Maybe not to that level, but I thought Indiana was going to be very relevant year in and year out. And he had four tournament appearances in 9 years. And they had some really good years, some really good teams. They were close, but I don't know. I guess maybe I gave him unfair expectations. Yeah. I thought it was going to look better than it did.
Indiana's problem right now is they're not even like the top four program in their own state right now. I mean, Notre Dame's a better
program.
Purdue's better. Butler's a better program.
Butler for sure.
I mean, they're like the fourth behind those guys. And Butler's now in the Big East, so that's elevated that program. Purdue has won more Big Ten championships than Indiana, if you guys knew that, with 32. Something a lot of people don't know, and Purdue's looking like a Final Four of the team this year, and then Notre Dame has been consistent under Mike Brave for like the last decade, so that's not helping the fact that those programs are relevant in Indiana and that they can't keep the in-state top talent.
But usually consistent chokers in the tournament, though.
Yeah, very true.
Right? Other than the 1 year. But, he's done a good job at Notre Dame. That's not an easy basketball job. All right, I said going into the break, I was going to throw out to you, just get your opinion, because I thought it was a interesting tweet by the NHL Network. So they're basically asking the hockey fans out there. Sidney Crosby reached his 400-goal milestone yesterday in their win over the Blues. And we know he's a superstar. But they listed some other young, up-and-coming guys. And they said, you know, who's going to get to 400 goals faster? And all these guys that they listed pretty much around the same range from 60 to 70 goals other than one guy. They've listed five guys. I'm going to ask you, Willie, to tell me who they threw out there as, you know, the next Sidney Crosby to kind of reach a milestone like that.
Well, you got to tell me, Sidney Crosby is what, 31, 32?
Mm-hmm. So these are the young guys.
Which shows you, you know, and he missed what? He's missed some time with he had the concussion issues.
No doubt.
So it's pretty remarkable that it's not like he's 37 is what I'm getting at. You know, sometimes you think, well, Sidney Crosby, he's around for a long time. He's not that old when you get to it.
He's logged a lot of miles, though, on that body.
He really has. When I was watching their game yesterday, Mike Emmerich was making that point that, you know, your prime years are probably, you know, 25 to 27, 28, but they're still getting it done. The Penguins are kind of sneaky good right now. They're starting to get back into the picture. I'm sure everybody in the East is going, oh, boy, they're still the Penguins. Because Malkin is, what, 1 year younger than Crosby? So I think it's either 32 and 31 or 31 and 30, the ages of those two franchise guys. Of course, they had to be bankrupt and awful to get them. And they had to win the lottery to get Crosby when everybody was in the lottery. So that they were extremely fortunate.
That was the lockout year, awful. Right?
Yeah. All right, so who are they throwing out there?
So they're throwing out five young guys. Like, who's
young guys?
Which young star is most likely to reach 400 goals first?
Okay, so these are guys in the low 20s, you're saying. These are guys that are nowhere near 400 right now.
You talking about age or goals?
Age.
Oh, yeah, age for sure. Yes, these are young
guys. Okay, so Connor McDavid would be one.
Connor McDavid, okay. Do you know how many goals that how many goals does he have?
Well, what is this? His third year, so he's probably closing in on...
Miss some time.
He's less than 100.
Yep, 68 goals.
Yeah.
68 goals in 181 games.
But he's only, what, 21?
Yep.
Or 20? he's got a lot of games in front of him.
I think Austin actually Matthews. All these guys are 21 and under is what I
okay.
think.
Okay, Austin Matthews would be probably in this range.
Austin Matthews, 66 goals, 129 games.
Okay. Johnny Gaudreau, maybe?
Johnny Gaudreau, not on the list.
He's more of a passer than a goal scorer. Let's think. Patrick Laine?
Patrick Laine, 129 games, 61 goals. So 68 goals wow. for McDavid, 66 for Matthews, 61 for Laine.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are just babies. These guys are just scratching the surface, 18, 19, 20 years old. Let's think.
Well, you're Who missing else? One guy in that theme that you've already thrown out there. I mean, there's one guy missing.
Premier scorers at a young age.
Well, what have you been naming? You've been naming the top pick and the second pick, so you're missing one pick.
Remember the why is he not popping into my head?
The back to back years. Well, he's out injured right now with Buffalo. Jack Eichel.
Oh, Jack Eichel. Yeah, sure.
So Jack Eichel, 70 goals. Ironically, he's got the most. I would have never said that. I should have asked you that before I just threw that out there. He has the most of the group, 70 goals in 197 games.
Impressive.
Yeah. So you've got McDavid, Matthews, Laine, and Eichel. And so this is another reason I asked, because I want to see if you can name the fifth guy, and I don't think you will. It's just you're not thinking about it, but it'll make sense when you hear
Eastern
the answer.
Eastern Conference or Western Conference?
Western Conference. Pacific Division.
Out in the Pacific. And he's young. He's like these other guys. Still
yep. Same
beginning
group.
Stages.
Same type of.
Same group.
Yep.
Calgary. Sean Monahan?
Nope. He's boring.
He is boring, but he is pretty good.
Yes, he is.
Let's see. Not L.A. Not Vegas.
I can't give you a hint because it'll give it away.
It's not a Vancouver guy. Sharks?
Mr. All-Star Game.
Mr. All-Star Game.
Who was the guy? Who was the guy this year in Tampa?
Oh, I've already forgotten.
Yeah, Brock Besser. Vancouver.
Brock Besser?
Yeah.
Okay, but this is his first year.
I know. So listen to his stats. He has 30.
Man,
he has
really
30
good.
Goals this year. 61 games. He's played 61 games. He already has 30 goals.
I just assumed they wouldn't have a guy in his first year on this.
Well, list. What's funny is when you look at that list, if you look at the projections, he would be projected higher than anybody.
Yeah, but that's kind of a small scale version
know,
of when
I
a guy
know.
Has like. Six home runs in the first 2 weeks
that.
Of the season. Well, he's projected for 130 home runs. You can't quite go that.
No. But
he is a heck of a player. He's a talent.
So your answer would be, because the question is, which one of these young stars is most likely to reach 400 goals first? What would your answer be?
You know, as great as McDavid is, what we're learning is he's maybe even more of a pass-first guy than we know. Maybe Austin Matthews.
That would have been
You know what? You know what I might go with the more I watch him? He's just pure sniper, and that's Laine.
Wow.
He is incredible as a shooter, and he's going to always be a shooter a little bit more in that mold than a guy who's going to get a lot of goals, but he's also going to get way more assists. Matthews is close, and so to me it would be between Laine and Matthews, but I'll take Laine.
I would have picked Matthews. So isn't that interesting that both of us don't pick Connor McDavid? which I would think would be the natural choice of most.
May not be very smart.
Right. It's going to be – he's probably going to win. Right. He'll win.
He's the best of all of them. He's the best of all of them. And Sidney Crosby, you could say, is not just a pure goal scorer. So he's got 400, but he does everything. You know, he's not just a shooter.
He's a good dribbler of heads.
He even dribbles heads. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
got a little basketball talent in him. I don't know if it's legal, but I guess it was legal.
He throws water bottles.
He does throw water bottles. He tells people they have bad breath. All right, we'll come back.
I think PK admitted that was not true. I think that was revealed this last trip through Montreal.
He just sat down up in Montreal and did an interview and said he did say that in the interview. Didn't he?
He said that did not happen.
Oh, he said it didn't happen.
I think he admitted it did not happen. I think
you're talking about the interview with Nick.
Yeah, with Nick Kiprios.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back and wrap up.
Ain't shady, baby, I'm hot like the prodigal son.
Got Scott Hartnell and Philip Forsberg in there, bringing us back. We touched on this with Terry McCormick earlier in the show, TitanInsider.com, the E60 piece on Steve McNair that aired Sunday morning. I watched it a couple of times yesterday. Willie, did you get a chance to see it? He's lost for words. He saw it and he didn't know what to say.
Let's go find Willie.
Guys.
You there?
I was plugging back in. Okay. Sorry, I unplugged my headset for a second there.
I said I watched it a couple of times yesterday. I really enjoyed it. Obviously, I watched it a couple of times. But did you get a chance to see it?
Yeah, I saw a lot of it. I haven't seen the whole thing, which I want to go back and watch the whole thing. I did read the article as well. And I guess the part that I saw anyway, I didn't learn a whole lot just because we followed it so closely, him coming up through the ranks and everything, although I always enjoy going back and watching Steve McNair, especially when I hadn't in a while, some of the great moves. I mean, the highlights from Alcorn State, just incredible. And I love hearing Floyd Reese talk about those days when he was scouting Steve McNair, and he and everybody with his staff is trying to figure out, how does this translate? Does this translate to the NFL, the greatness that you're seeing at Alcorn State in that environment? I mean, the way he was just every week. I mean, just captured the entire – for people that are a little bit younger, it became such a big thing, right? Before we ever knew he was coming to Nashville or anything like that, he had become a national name from Alcorn State just because of these crazy highlights you would see every week with him, you know, running and throwing as a one-man show. You know, but Floyd Reese has got to figure out, can this happen – number one, jumping from his conference up to the NFL, and number two, changing his style to become more in line with what you have to do to survive as an NFL quarterback. It was just an amazing evolution of his game, because we know he always could run. He was always tough, but he learned so much of how to be a good passer. He got better every year in that area.
Were you surprised Floyd Reese was not featured more in that E60 piece?
Yeah, you never know.
It's the guy who drafted him.
This is what I appreciated, though, about what they did, because it was a lot more about Michelle, who I don't know. I've never really conversed with Michelle McNair, but it is so admirable what she has done with her two boys. And, of course, you know, Tyler is a great story. He's up at NYU now and doing his thing with dancing and all that. That's been reported a lot here. It's, you know, the younger star, is it Trey or Trent? Trey?
I think it's
the middle schooler. He's you know, he's still got a lot in front of him. He's middle school aged, and he's apparently a pretty talented player himself, plays a lot of basketball. So I'll be curious to see where his career goes, and there was a lot written about him. But Michelle, you know, one question she asked herself in the article is, you know, what is my purpose? What's my identity, especially after my boys have moved on into college and into their lives? Because she deserves so much credit for raising those two guys. But I love the fact that she's sort of asking that question. And the fact that she is openly, I think that tells you a lot about her. And I think it's going to mean good things for her down the road. But you just have to admire the job she has done with all she's had to deal with.
Well, something that wasn't mentioned in the E60 piece, but if you read the article on ESPN.com, it said that she was going to Alcorn State to be a doctor, right? Did I read that correctly? I think that was the first time I'd ever heard that, that she was going there to be a doctor someday. And, of course, her career path and her path would change when she had a class with Steve McNair, and I guess, as they say, the rest is history. But, yeah, so many times we don't ever get the family side of things. Like, we've covered these guys. We know about their career. We know about them on the field. We know about their practice habits or what they do, you know, before a game. Steve McNair, you know, the naps. We knew all that storyline, but we never really know what's going on behind the scenes, what his family life is like and what it's like for the family having a, you know, a famous dad. And so that's the part that I enjoyed because, quite honestly, like you, I've never been around the family either. You know, as much as we covered Steve McNair and were around him, never around the family. I always saw him carrying his kid after games on the field. I did see that at the time. I didn't realize that was Tyler. And, you know, we saw the captions there in the E60 piece, but, you know, never had a chance to be around the family. It was interesting to have them talk about, if you read the article, about Zach Piller, I guess, is still involved in their life.
Man. That was very touching. I, you know, these are things that are beneath the surface, but it says a lot about Nashville as a community. They've stayed, right? Michelle has decided to raise the boys here. Would have been completely understandable if she wanted to just go back, move somewhere else to get a fresh start somewhere. But I think it's great how, sort of behind the scenes, you know, not in the spotlight, she's raised these two great kids. And there's, again, a bright future, of course, ahead for both of them, you would hope. And again, it just makes me feel good about our community as a whole.
Good stuff. Good show. Tomorrow we'll be at the arena. Predators and Blues tomorrow night, 7 o'clock puck drop, pregame at 6. Everybody have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.